Vieni qua vicino a me allora. No, vieni in sala. Che brutto. No, tanto è.
All right. Sorry. Surprise, we all brought you here for your first Italian lesson. So Barbara, how about it?
Buonasera.
Buonasera.
Awesome.
Very good. All right.
Pass the class.
So a few announcements before we get started. This is just going to be an informal time to ask them questions. We'll give you some time at the end, hopefully, to ask some questions of them as well. So, and kids specifically, too, if you have questions you want to ask, make sure you guys take the time to ask them. I know they will.
Not my kids.
We are going to aim to be done no later than 7. I know it is hot down here, but hopefully we can cover a lot in a short amount of time. And then the second announcement, we sent out an email this afternoon. No baby shower tomorrow evening. Kate Morgan is actually, she was in labor at the time I sent the email this afternoon, so I don't know what the status is now. But so no baby shower. We'll keep you posted on when that's going to be. So I will open us up in prayer, and then we'll get started. Father, thank you for this time together as a body of believers. Thank you for bringing the Schwanvelts here and the blessing it is to have them and to hear about what's going on in Italy. We pray that you would bless our time this evening. Pray that it would be a sweet grace to this church and to the Schwanvelt family to get to know one another and continue to work together on your mission in building your kingdom here on earth. We pray that you would, just bless our time together. In Jesus' name, amen. All right. We are recording this. So if you have family members home sick, you guys, we'll post it at some point in the next couple weeks. So just maybe to get to know you guys a little bit, if you could take 3 to 5 minutes each to share your testimony of how the Lord has brought you to faith, that would be great.
I'll start. For those of you who haven't heard my testimony, I love it. My parents were not Christians when I was born, and my dad was in the military, and we were moving around from place to place. And there's a lot of unrest, I think, in our family and our lives. And my dad was stationed in Alameda, California. My mother started attending a women's Bible study, BSF, and as they were studying, I believe, the Book of John, the Lord just changed her world upside down, and she put her trust in Christ. And then she was the one who brought the gospel to our family, and so my dad believed and made a profession of faith, and then they explained the gospel to us as a family. So I was fairly young. I was probably 7 or 8 years old. As they're explaining it to me, I recognized my sin, and I recognized the greatness of our Savior, and put my trust in Jesus for what He's done for me. And I think as I was growing in my faith, so I think part of that testimony is, when I was in high school, I started working at a Christian camp in the state of Washington, pretty close to Seattle. And so that's why I have a big love for Big Sky Bible Camp and what's going on there, because it was me working as a counselor there that the Lord really, really, it was probably the first big time in my life where I felt, okay, this is more than just about me. This is about his world and what's going on here. I think it was there that there were some seeds even for missions that were sown. And being surrounded by a lot of young people who are passionate for Christ, and it was there that I think that I really learned to dig into the Word and to pray. And then I went to university in Virginia. And I think it was, there's all these steps where I think that the Lord was deepening my faith and working in my heart. But in the beginning, it was this beautiful message of God changed my parents, and then they brought that gospel to our family, and we'll forever be changed. So very thankful for that.
For me, I was born in Italy, close to Milan. That is one of the main cities in the country. And my dad was a devoted Catholic, and all his relatives were, I mean, his parents. My mom was just not really into religion. But they got married really young, and at a certain point, their marriage wasn't working. And so this was really hard for my dad, because he grew up following the religion that was taught to him, and he thought if he would have done everything that the religion asked him to do, he would have a blessed life. But that was actually what God used to make him look for more. He tried, in Italy we have a radio station that is called Radio Maria, Mary Radio, that broadcasts 24 hours, like, prayers, programs that just talk about Mary. And so I remember, I have memories, I was in my teenagers year, middle school years, that he was listening to this radio station nonstop, trying to find an answer. But of course, he didn't find the right answer. And later on, he discovered that one of his colleagues at work was a believer. And so he started studying the Bible with him, and he ended up being saved through still arguing with his priest, because my dad has a personality that he needed to be convinced before changing religion. So I remember he had been studying the Bible for 6 months with this believer and with the priest, the local priest of the town, trying to understand what was true. The truth. At the end, he ended up being saved, and so he brought the gospel to us. And I just, in a few months, I got saved, my mom got saved, and so that is, I have a brother, and later on a sister was born too. And so that is what brought us to the faith. At the beginning, it wasn't hard for me to believe, because I already believed that the Bible is true, and I was raised Catholic, so I believed there was God and the Trinity. It became a little more challenging during the high school year, because I attended a high school that studied Greek philosophy and Nietzsche, for who is familiar. So I had to kind of test what I was studying at school with the Bible, but I discovered that the more I read the Bible, the more answer I found by myself. And I spent a lot of time in camps too to help build my faith. Up to, you need to understand, in Italy, like, the people that are not Catholic are 0.01%.
Yeah, something like that.
It's like there is not, like here, that you can have churches, Christianity, of different type of Christianity. There you only have the Catholic Church or the Jehovah's Witnesses. So it was really, we could really see how God orchestrated everything to bring us to the faith. So that's my story.
Matt, you just recently maybe kind of preached Barbara's dad's funeral. And can you just share, you shared this with me. Mm. What did he ask you to do specifically before he passed,
so,
as far as preaching goes?
Yeah, well, my father-in-law, who passed recently, he had cancer, and he was a very, very unique person. About as close, I think, to John the Baptist. Not only in what how he lived, but how he dressed. He was pretty extreme. And just a quick story before we asked him, just so you understand a little bit of the context, we asked him to, if he wanted to, because we knew him, do you want to say anything at our wedding? And he said, no, I hate weddings. I don't believe in weddings or whatever. And well, he believes in weddings, but he doesn't.
Not the
ceremony. He likes marriage, but not the ceremony. We'll see, whatever. Okay. Well, would you pray? Yeah, okay, I'll pray. And so and during our wedding, and when it was his time to pray, he hopped up, and you could just see a twinkle in his eye. And he runs down, basically jumps up onto the stage and grabs the microphone. And instead of praying, he starts preaching. And he said, I remember his beginning line was, he says, people ask me today if I'm emotional because my firstborn is getting married. No way. He says, I'm emotional when I see those commercials about the kids in Africa and all those flies flying around. And there's something else that makes me emotional. And he starts saying, Jesus Christ, he went to the cross. And he starts preaching for 30 minutes in the middle of our wedding. But the best part is, for those who know my father was supposed to pray after him. My father has no idea what's going on. But he knows his 22nd prayer is not going to compete with 30 minutes of whatever is going on. So this is him. But he when he knew he was going to be passing away, unless the Lord intervene, his request is he wanted the gospel to be preached at his funeral. In fact, he actually wanted to preach it himself. He wanted to record his own voice. He said, no, Dad, we'll have someone else. Barbara thought that was just too much. But his desire really was that the people, his family, the people that knew him and loved him, they would be able to hear once again that gospel message. So it was nice. It was a beautiful ceremony, and it was just neat to hear his testimony.
A little bit about your family. Share your kids' ages, names, either one of them.
Introduce yourself.
My name is Simone, and I am 18.
And what are you doing next year?
Going to start university.
And what are you going to be studying?
I'm studying mechanical engineering.
Okay. Good. Zoe, who she's working at camp this week. She is 15, and she is going to be in her second year at high school. And right now, she wants to become a doctor. And she's a very motivated student. Not that you boys aren't, but she's a very, very motivated student. And then Stefano, who are you?
I'm Stefano, and I'm 12 years old. I go to middle school.
You go to middle school. And you're going to be specifically in what grade in middle school?
Eighth.
He'll be an eighth grader next year. So we're all looking forward to that. He's going to be baptized when we get back in September.
All right. Matt, if you could share a little bit of your story of how you eventually left Montana and got to Italy. And you shared a little bit this morning about Elio and mm-hmm. how that came together. And just kind of maybe recap how you got to Italy and then your past 8 years and your involvement here and going back to Italy and all those things.
So I went to Liberty University. And at Liberty University, that was a wonderful experience for me. The Lord really got a hold of my heart, and he put me near some really dear friends who love the Lord, and I think God used those relationships, people who insisted that I was praying and reading the Bible, which was the best kind of accountability I could possibly have. And for me, it was pretty clear, I would guess, my second or third year of university, that I really wanted to be involved in missions. And so my roommate, my last year, he also really wanted to be involved in missions, and so we were praying together specifically about going to one of the ex-Yugoslavian countries, so Montenegro or Serbia or someplace. And after I finished university, I moved back to Great Falls, Montana. And in Great Falls, Montana, I was working as a teacher but also as a youth pastor. But I communicated to the church I wanted to be there for a few years to raise support to be able to go overseas. But in the end of the 90s, at that time, there was conflict in Serbia, and the U.S. got involved. And so I was in contact with some mission organizations, but it was impossible to get a visa to go to Yugoslavia. And so as a youth pastor, I brought kids on mission trips during the summer. So the first summer, we went to Mexico City. And the second summer, I brought the youth for a mission trip to Italy. And we were there for about 3 weeks doing street evangelism. And I think it was at that point the Lord was really, earlier that year, it just closed the door about Yugoslavia. And the head of the mission organization, who is a friend of Don, where's Don at? Who's a friend of Don. It's actually Don's old roommate, if we can talk about a small world. He's the head of the mission, and so he asked me if I'd be interested in joining him in planting a church in Trieste. Didn't even know where Trieste was. And when I looked, it was actually on the border of Slovenia, where I'd been praying about for a while. So I was really super excited about that. So I went back and reported to our church saying, this is an opportunity. The church was in agreement. So the next year we raised money and to go there for 4 years to help out. And so I moved to Trieste and I met Barbara there. She came, she was a Christian already, but she came to help teach us. There's another girl from Spokane. We both came to teach us Italian and get us started. And we were waiting for this church planner to come, but he never was able to make it. And so it's not the way church planning is supposed to take place. But by God's grace, incredible grace, amazing grace, we started English classes and some people got saved. And as we were kind of waiting, there was just this baby church that was born. And we served in Trieste working on this church for 15 years. And then after 15 years, the church had elders, and it had this Elio, who was a local leader, who was really capable of taking on the ministry. So it really felt like the time for us to get out of Trieste so we wouldn't be an obstacle. And so at the same time, Grace Church was looking for some help as an associate pastor. And I had met with Pastor Chris for many, many years. In fact, Grace Church had been supporting us. My parents had, for those who don't know, I've been attending Grace Church for a while. And every time I went back to visit, I talked with Pastor Chris. And so it was just kind of a perfect chance for us to get out of Italy for 3 years so Elio could start leading the church. I could help some needs here in Kalispell, Montana. And then after 3 years, we moved back to Trieste so that we could continue to help as a supportive role for Elio. And we did that until through 2021, until this new work got started.
Any funny stories about, I mean, I know you have funny stories about your work as a missionary in Italy. Any ones that you can think of to share?
There's a long list.
Or Barbara, do you have any funny stories about Matt's?
He has more funny stories than me.
There are a lot of stories. I can give you some of my favorites just to show how exciting church planning can be. I think it was about maybe the second year. The church, just so you understand, was probably about 10 people, and there was an unbeliever who had been attending for a while, maybe like 4 months or 5 months, and I made some mistakes. I could barely speak Italian, and I was pretty sure that the best idea was for me to teach verse by verse through the book of Job. Really, I just laugh at myself, and I think about, it's amazing that the church could actually survive that. But anyway, that's a different story. So I felt like I was really connecting with this person, but he said to me, he goes, I really want to sing for the church next week. I said, you want to sing for the church next week? And we didn't have you know, like special music, or it wasn't part of what we were doing. So I said, how about after the church you can sing for us? And so as the church service ended, everybody stayed. There's like 10 of us, and he gets up and he had a little one of those little cassette players, and he pushed play and he kind of bowed his head, and then the music came and he kind of popped up. And it was We Are the Champions. And he just let us have it. He just gave us his best rendition that he could of We Are the Champions. I think it was like a karaoke like track or something. And so that was definitely a highlight. We were just kind of, we didn't know exactly how to respond at that point. So that was a favorite. Another one that was kind of interesting was, also, this was probably year like 4. The church was now about 20, 25 people. And as I'm preaching, in Italy, we do the Lord's Supper every Sunday. And as I'm preaching, somebody gets up and just starts taking the bread and just starts eating it as they're listening to me. They're listening to me as I'm preaching. So I had to stop and say, no, no, You know, this is not for eating. But then, this is not a snack. But the person was extremely embarrassed now, and so she, you know, slammed the bread, ran to the door, slammed the door of the church, and it took some delicate conversations afterwards to try to deal with that. So there's lots of funny stories. We also had during a Bible study once. We were having a Bible study, and some guy came in with a mask and a rose and just came in and gave it to someone and walked out the door. So random acts of, I don't know what that was. So it's pretty exciting. There's lots of things to keep you on your toes.
Maybe take a minute to speak to the kids and as much as you can, maybe explain what it might look like to be called to missions, how kids should be thinking now about missions work and the church and all of those things.
Okay. I love this question. This is a great question. I'm also a teacher, so I really like speaking to kids, and because I think it's really important, and I know that the gospel is so powerful, and the message of Christ is so great. I love how it just talks to every single generation, and I think if kids, if you want my, I can tell you what happened in my life. When I was in college, I started reading a book about God's holiness, and it was at that point, even though I knew Christ, I trusted in Christ, when I started studying God and seeing how different He was than me and everything else, God just became so big in my mind and in my heart that I couldn't resist. I felt like I was almost like He was so big, He was like the sun, and I had to spin around Him. I was pulled in by His gravity. And so I think it was the study of who God is that really started pulling me into feeling this call for missions. And the bigger God got, the more excited I was to say, where can I go and who can I talk to people about? And that was really, really important. So if you're ever interested, you think, what do I think about missions? My first advice for you would be start learning about who God is. That was foundational for me. Secondly, though, I think it's also important that we realize that when people go on global missions, when they leave their country, it should be because they're already working the missions where there are. So it's so important that you are, wherever you are, even if you're young, you're helping out in Sunday school, helping out your Sunday school teacher. You're finding ways that you can get involved. If you're a youth, like in high school or junior high, you're seeing ways that you can be serving. You might be setting up chairs. You might be cleaning up the bathrooms. You're asking people what can be done, because that's really what I can tell you right now. My first years in the church, I was mopping floors, I was cleaning bathrooms. You really are just trying to serve people. And the more you get used to serving and being involved in church ministry, that kind of prepares you for a task, maybe to do it in a more difficult place where people are speaking kind of a funny language. It makes it just a little bit easier. And the third thing I think is you need to make sure that there's adults in the church. If you're thinking about missions, talk with them. Get in contact with them. Ask them questions. Because they're going to be the ones who are going to be able to confirm that call that God might be putting in your life to go and do something as amazing as telling other people about Jesus Christ in a different place from where you live. So I think that would probably be my advice for youth. Really learn who God is. And then make sure that you're really involved in ministry. And then also make sure you're also talking with your parents and your pastors and elders and talking to them about what you're thinking.
Do you have a favorite missionary or biography that you've read?
Yes, for me, for sure, I loved Jim Elliot when I was in college. I read a couple of his biographies about him. And also another good one for youth, there's a book called Passion for Purity, I think is what it's called. And it seems like it might be about a love story, and it kind of is, but it's really talking about two young people who God has called to missions and kind of how they work that out. It's kind of in a diary form. It's a fantastic book. But I think Jim Elliot was, his stories were very important to me. But I think all biographies of missionaries and just ministers in the past have been very helpful as well.
How about speak to the parents now? How do we help cultivate a spirit of missions in our kids? If my child comes up to me and says, "Dad, I think I want to do missions," how do we as parents help cultivate that in our kids?
Well, for us in Italy, it's not a choice for our children because they are the only one in their classroom, most likely in their school, that are Christian. So we just teach them to see the world in a different way. Kind of what Matt was telling us this morning, that we always pray for our children and for us too to see the people as Jesus sees them. And when he was looking over Jerusalem and see didn't see the splendor of the sea. It was a religious city, but he saw them as sheep without a pastor. And so I think it's the perspective, it's important that we together as a family have the right perspective on things. And the missionary stories are really important. So because there are a lot of young girls, I remember I read one about Amy Carmichael. She was a missionary in India. Have you ever heard of Amy Carmichael? Okay, so there's another question that seems it doesn't relate to this, but who would like to have blue eyes? You would like to have blue eyes. Do you have blue eyes?
No.
Green. You would like to have blue eyes. Do you have blue eyes?
Mm-hmm.
No. Do you like having blue eyes?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So when I was younger, I read the story about Amy Carmichael. Amy Carmichael was from England. And usually in England, people do have blue eyes. But she did not have blue eyes. She had beautiful
brown
eyes. And she was always upset about that because she really wanted to have blue eyes. And she prayed and prayed, even in the story of her life. One night she went to bed and said, "God, I believe I have enough faith. I'm sure that tomorrow morning I'll wake up and I have blue eyes." What do you think happened the next morning? Did she have blue eyes? No, it didn't happen. But many years later, when she was a missionary in India, she realized that having had brown eyes made her look more like the people she was ministering to, the Indians. And that helped her to touch the society in a different way. Because they thought she started dressing like them and acting like them. And they were able to relate to her better because she looked more like them. So I think even for us as parents and as for our children, our strengths and our weaknesses can just be part of God's plan to prepare us for mission. So so we try to do this. My first son, he's really brave. He doesn't fear traveling, go anywhere and
try anything.
Yeah, try anything. He forgets to pack everything. So maybe he's ready to go to the jungle because he always forgets about his toothbrush. So it's fine. My other kids are maybe more fearful, but I have other strength. And also I think to help them to see the way that God made them could be linked with whatever God will call them to do.
Right.
You wanna?
No, I think that's really good advice, is recognizing and helping our families understand what our strengths and what our weaknesses, and how in God's hands our weaknesses are often His strengths, and what might seem like something that bothers us is actually wonderful for His kingdom. And I think I think reading and sharing missionary stories with your children is very helpful. I think those are things that those stories can kind of touch hearts and stay there and kind of percolate and help foster that call. And I also think that praying, having a family that prays about the world outside of them, whether it's their neighborhood or they hear their parents praying about opportunities, and they know a list of missionaries or places, things that they can pray for, praying for the persecuted church, those are all going to be good ways, I think, to kind of foster that mission mindset in our families.
All right, Matt, share about how the Lord brought you to the church in Udine.
This was kind of a strange one in Udine. So we were helping out in Trieste, and we were there for a couple of years after we came back from Grace Church. And while we were there, this was just after a very fun year, 2020. And in 2021, there was a missionary in Udine. And Udine is about 45, 50 miles away from Trieste. Trieste is on the seaside, and Udine is right at the hills, the foothills of the Alps. And so there's quite a bit of difference in those cultures, as I was explaining this morning. But there was a missionary who had been working for a while, and there was a group of about six believers there. We're just kind of in the beginning stages. And the missionary, who's a dear friend of ours, we had known him for a while, he had to go back to his family for kind of a family emergency. And as that happened, there was a real immediate need for to take care of those believers. And so he asked Elio and myself if we could be part of helping out, maybe going there every once in a while and finding ways to encourage them. And so as Elio was taking care of Trieste, it was like, okay, this is a chance for me to do some more. And so I planned on maybe once a month or twice a month to go to Udine to work with these believers. And I went to do the first church service, and we heard about another group of believers who had a break off from a church in Udine, mainly over some personality conflicts and doctrine. And they had been trying to kind of survive after COVID for about 3 or 4 months. And we heard also from someone coming to our church that there was some help needed, and so I went and met with them. And so we were able to kind of put these two groups together. And then in the beginning, it was just us going every 2 weeks and trying to help out. But then this group God was doing something special in this group, and it quickly went from about 25 and 30 and 40 and 50. So we could see this growing, and there was a real need for us to be going over more frequently. And so we started going every Sunday and then also on some Saturdays. And then last year I was able to go even once a week and just go visit some of the people that had needs, do some Bible studies, and really try to shepherd this group that right about now is about 60 people. So just so you understand, in 15 years in Trieste, we went from nothing to about 40, 45 people. And then in Udine, we started with a bigger group, but it's now kind of gone already to 60 people. So it's kind of ministry that we weren't expecting, we weren't used to. And I was mentioning how I felt like my time in Grace Church really was preparing me, because a lot of the things that I did here was exactly what was needed, I think, for this group. Doing a kind of a Grace Institute, teaching theology, getting everybody theologically from different groups on the same page. Also, just the kind of pastoral care that was needed. I gleaned so much from Pastor Chris and my time here. So it was really neat how God had used, even from my own ministry and my own life, teaching me really important things that were going to really be effective in this new ministry and in Udine.
Do you have a picture on the map of where Trieste?
I think so. Yeah, Simone, go. There's Trieste right up in the upper right hand corner. So as you look in Italy, it's on the farthest northeast edge, and right next to there is Slovenia, and so this right here. this region, this is one of the 20 regions of Italy, and it's called Friuli Venezia Giulia, and it's kind of divided into three groups that have been put together. This group is more linked with Venice, because Venice is going to be down here. This is going to be linked with Venice, that kind of culture. In the middle, it's called Friuli, which is kind of that hard farming, working kind of person. And then over here are the partiers on the beach there in Trieste. So Trieste is going to be the capital of the region. It's about 250,000 people there. Udine in the city is about 100,000 people, but the whole county is 500,000 people. It's a big farming community too. So there's all sorts of these small little towns all over the place. So our ministry, since we went over there in 2000, has all been basically in this part of Italy. That helps.
Yeah. And Barbara, you're originally from Trieste.
No, I'm from Milan. If you can show where.
Uh-oh, now I have a geography test. So Milan is going to be... right there.
Yes.
Right there. I do better when there's words on them. her family now lives just east of Milan in a city called Bergamo, which you might have heard about because during the pandemic it was that first big hot spot in Italy where it was just a real big mess, which is actually where her family was from. Her family was fine through all of that, but this was kind of that intense moment during COVID right there. This is Sicily. Sardinia.
Show me Umbria.
Umbria?
Well, you can go on with the presentation.
Yeah, it's better.
Maybe share a little bit about the culture in Trieste and Udine.
Yes.
And, yeah.
So Trieste, it's famous for people not wanting to work. So it's basically, why let work get in the way of fun? And so obviously it's an industrial port city. You can see it's on the water. It's beautiful. This in the bottom corner is Piazza Unità, and it's just a beautiful piazza on the waterfront. This is a castle. And it has some rich history, and so you can kind of see the beauty. We have our own canal, not just Venice. We have just one, but we do have a canal in Trieste as well. But the culture really is very diverse. It was after World War II, it officially was like an independent city, and so it wasn't part of Italy anymore, and it was governed by the Americans and the British. They were the kind of the police force, and that lasted for 8 years. And then after that, it returned again to becoming an Italian city. But because of that, there's one of the largest synagogues in Europe is in Trieste. There's the big Greek Orthodox Church. There's a Serbian Orthodox Church. And so when you're ministering Trieste, everybody's very open to listening, but very slow to making any kind of decision. They see an evangelical church is almost a cultural experience, and we have people who come for a long time, for months, but the main idea is just to kind of understand the culture of who we are and what we're talking about. So they're very open to that. So those are some of the challenges maybe of Trieste. Anything else you can think of?
Yeah.
My kids love Trieste though. It's a beautiful place. It's a fun place.
I saw a picture of the Vanellis. Can you share a little bit about the Vanellis? So as a church, we support both the Schwanabelts and the Vanellis. We started supporting Elio when Matt came over here. And, yeah, Elio, the whole family's been over here, I think, once. Elio's
twice,
been,
I think. Oh, yeah, it's true. The whole family once.
And Elio's been over here twice, and he's preached here, I think, at least one time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just share a little bit about the Vanellis.
So that's Elio Nicoletta. I was telling you about the woman who left her number in the box. That's Nicoletta there with Elio, her husband. And this in the middle there is the eldest son, Christopher, who's Zoe's age. So he's going to be in 10th grade next year. And then Gabriel is on the left there, which is almost the exact same age as Stefano. They were born just about 16, not about, exactly 16 days apart. And so they're such a blessing. They're such a blessing not only to the city of Trieste, where he's pastoring and really trying to shepherd that. You can pray for them because it's a little bit difficult. Because Trieste in 2020, and this was starting before the pandemic, but we were in the phase of starting a new church in Trieste, kind of in the outskirts of Trieste. And so we were four elders, and so two of the elders were going to go start this new work with another family. But you can imagine a church of about 40 to lose two elders and their families. Now that church is going to be down to, our church was down to probably about 25. And they went and started that church. And then through this opening in Udine, our family left. And so the church has had a little bit of a struggle, just kind of feeling like they're shrinking. And as you know, there's always discouragement, I think, in those times. So we can be really praying for Trieste and just continued growth. There's a lot of work that's being done, but I think they feel a little bit of the... They're excited because now there's two new churches that have all kind of started through this. So collectively, we can see this great work, but they probably paid the biggest price for that. And so I think they could really benefit from prayers about encouragement. And there's also that he has one group of potential as a potential leader. And who's a young man, neat guy, and he's recently married, but he might be leaving in a year to go. He's not from Italy. He might be leaving to go back home. His name is Werner, and if you can be praying for Werner and Raquel, just for wisdom. No, they kind of want to stay in Trieste because of the work of the ministry, but their job kind of ends in Trieste, so they have to figure out what that means for them if they are going to stay. But that they're a really important couple for the Vanellis right now. But also, Elio is really neat because he has a very big impact in the national ministry of Italy. If you go back to that map. So in that region I was telling you about, we're all part of a network of churches. Just so you know, you might hear this. It's called Serenissima Ministry. So if anybody gets a newsletter from Elio or myself, or a prayer card, or for donations, you're going to see that this word Serenissima. That's a network of churches, mainly in our region. And there's about seven churches now in total, and there's going to be two new church plants probably coming up soon. And so Elio is the vice president of this organization that we have for planting churches there, which keeps him very busy. He's also on the board of the organization called Acts 29 Italy, and so he's very much involved in that. And he's on the board of the Gospel Coalition Italy, which means he's traveling a lot. He's writing articles for the Gospel Coalition. In Acts 29, he's actually training up new pastors all over Italy, and he goes and visits them and encourages them and gets people in the right place. So Elio is super busy with national ministry as well with his local ministry. So again, your prayer is very much, very much appreciated with what he's doing.
What are some of your goals, maybe for the next 5 years in your church in Udine?
Yes,
and even if you know of some of Elio's goals as well, that we can be praying with you guys.
One of the things for Elio is also their church right now meets in this beautiful historic church in Trieste. It's an old Methodist church. Do you know how old it is? It's going to be.
It's the end of 1800s.
So
1890 something,
there was this beautiful old church. It's gorgeous. It has this little courtyard, and they use that in the afternoons on Sundays as their worship place. But right now they're trying to buy a place in the middle of probably one of the most densely populated areas of Trieste to be able to invite people in to do some Bible studies, to eat together, organize some things together. So one of the things that they were asking for is just, they're buying this new building for ministry, but they're trying to find the right one in the right place. And so you can be praying for them as well. And also his son is going to be baptized. The one that's 16 days apart is going to be baptized along with Stefano. And so you can just pray for also for that as well as his family. And for us too. 5-year. So for Udine, I think, what we really need is, there's a lot of deacons, I believe, in Udine. But we need to really put a lot of emphasis on training new elders and preachers and leaders. And so that would probably be something that you could all pray for, which is part of our plan is, okay, what are the steps with the people that we have now to be able to raise up and train leaders so that they're going to be able to continue on the pastoral ministry, they're going to be able to take on the preaching ministry that we have. So that's going to be probably one of the key goals that we have. And also we want to structure what we're teaching, and we want the whole body to begin, because we have this weird beginning where we have different groups together. How can we be communicating and teaching and finding unity and working through that together? So trying to be more structured on that with small groups and more. I'm trying to remember the name we used to use when you're meeting with two or three people.
Growth groups.
So trying to figure out how that can fit in with us as a body now, I think is going to be very important for the next couple years.
And you guys will be still living in Trieste.
Yeah, that's a complication too. So Barbara is as a teacher, as you might have heard as she explained, as she was speaking, and as she corrected me on my geography. So she's her job is still in Trieste, and also Zoe in particular is going to a specific school. She has aspirations to become a doctor, and so there's a little bit of difficulty for us to move to Udine, but our heart is that we would like to be closer. So right now it's about a 50-minute commute that we do. Which we have that energy, that excitement right now. But just for wisdom, I think, for us to know what that looks like in the future. So we're still living kind of on the north. We're living on the Udine side of Trieste, so it's not too far. And the drive is pretty easy, but we do need wisdom to know what that might look like in the future. Pictures of Udine, Simone, okay. So you can kind of see that it's not on the water, but it's still going to have that beautiful Italian look to it. Here's the main piazza in Udine, and you can kind of see the skyline again with the biggest dome church that they have, and it's just surrounded by these beautiful Alps in the background. So it's probably about 20 minutes away from the pre-Alps, and so. Kind of this picturesque backdrop. So this is just talking a little bit about Udine again. They really love work and home and family. So it kind of reminds me a little bit of Montana, to be honest with you. So it can feel, compared to Trieste, a little bit more closed to outsiders. And a little bit more protective of what they have. They're a little more maybe suspicious and traditional. That the Trieste one is very open to everything. The day before we flew to Italy this summer, I was at a funeral though, and this funeral in Udine, that was the father of one of our members. It was really clear the difference in the message of the Catholic Church, especially in Udine, and the gospel. And during the funeral, the priest said specifically that this father, this man, was a child of God because he was baptized in the Catholic Church. He maintained that because he was fairly regular in attending the church, but he never could be pure in heart, and so he can't get to heaven. And so the only chance he has for heaven is going to be for our donations, and they handed around the offering plate, and for our prayers. And so the message was very clearly salvation is going to be through giving and through praying hard enough for people. That's going to somehow purify their hearts perfectly until they're pure enough to be able to get to heaven. So it was a real reminder for me. This is the reality of a lot of the mentality that we can have. We went to Rome about 2 weeks ago, and in Rome, we went to, if anybody knows the story of Martin Luther, we went to the La Scala Santa, the Holy Stairs, and those Holy Stairs are making that promise during Lent. If you pray up the stairs on Friday, half of your sins are forgiven, and every other day it's like, we're not sure exactly how many are forgiven, but they're making, yeah, here's the picture of that. They're making very clear claims about salvation through offering, through praying, salvation through praying as you're going upstairs. And so it's a real battle proclaiming a gospel that's saying that's not how salvation takes place. That's not how we can purify a heart through offerings. There's a lot of work to be done, and I was reminded of that at that funeral in Udine.
Would you say that most people in Italy are saved out of Roman Catholicism or out of just nothing at all?
Trieste, it would be probably saved out of nothing at all. I would say the typical person in Trieste is going to be... Trieste is a major science center. It's one of the biggest physics... research places, not only in Italy but in the world. We have an atom spinner. We have lots of different researches. So it tends to be a little more scientific and agnostic or atheistic. That's probably the typical person from Trieste. In Udine, it's going to be a lot more Catholic, a lot more religious. I think we feel that a little bit more. There's a little more sense of being religious compared to an atheist.
Is there, if someone comes out of Roman Catholicism into Christianity, is there repercussions from their family, or is it?
Yes. And I didn't say who it was, but it was actually my father-in-law, who, after he made profession of faith, it was Barbara's grandfather who told Barbara's father, you know, I cannot believe you would do something to your mother. And there was a real sense of conflict and tension that not only he felt, but all the family felt. In fact, there was an atheist who married into the family. He was relieved because he no longer was the black sheep of the family, but it went to someone else. He actually told us that. He's like, oh, the best thing was when your father was converted because it took all the pressure off of me. So that's a real deal. The family pressure of this is our tradition. This is who we are. You know, you hear statements like, you know, Easter is about being with family. And so if you're late to lunch because you're at a service, how could you do that to your family? How could you leave them not attending the lunch together? So you really do feel that, even from people who are not necessarily even practicing Catholics.
Maybe we'll open it up. Is there any questions specifically from the kids? And when I say kids, maybe 15 down. So Matt and Barbara about anything you heard tonight or anything else, and we can look through pictures as well. But any questions from the kids?
Well, who's got a question for us? Someone's got a question. Any questions about Italy or about food in Italy, about ice cream in Italy? Yes?
Where is Italy?
That's a great starting question. Italy is, I'll let the geography teacher tell you that one before I mess it up.
hard to explain. On the other side of the ocean, it's in Europe. You know, of the Atlantic Ocean.
It's in the Mediterranean Sea. And do you know what it's shaped like? It's famous because it has a funny shape to it. Did you see the picture we had before? Can you show that picture? What shape, what does that look like? It does look like a boot. Look at that. That's why they're so obsessed about soccer. Look,
yes,
kicking a soccer ball down there.
They changed Sicily with a ball, and so they kick Sicily like soccer in a ball.
And
they call this the one for
the heel? The spur.
The spur. Yeah.
What's it like in Italy during the World Cup?
Well,
when they qualify for the World Cup.
Thank you.
Because those are two different feelings. One is depression. One is... we were there in Italy. When Italy won in 2006 the World Cup, I thought the world had ended. It's kind of fun. You're in an apartment. Everybody's watching the game.
It's summer, so you have
all the windows are open.
And there is silence until Italy scores.
And it's like everybody in the whole boot screams all together at one time. And like you can feel things are rattling. It's just like... So there's no question, even if you're not watching the game, you know if Italy has scored. That is clear. So there is a lot of drama, both when they win and both when they don't qualify. Both of those is very...
We have other sports, but nobody talk about them. We have a sport magazine that comes out every day. It's called actually La Gazzetta Rosa because it's pink. And out of like 24 pages, 20 are for soccer and 4 for all the other sports like basketball.
Anything else, yeah.
So
if you're lucky, you make it.
Yeah.
Every day they have at least 20 pages of things to talk about. Opinions and soccer, yes, exactly right. They call it football. They get upset when you call it soccer.
Sam and I were talking earlier. Matt, Barbara, do you guys think in one language? And how do interactions in your home go?
Very well.
Matt, do you normally think in English and... or have to, like, filter everything through?
You're assuming that I'm thinking. I like that. I've got to think about that, actually. I would say when I teach, because I'm speaking in English when I was teaching, I think in English. But when I'm not teaching, I often will be thinking in Italian. I do talk to myself sometimes in Italian. And we're pretty... you know, we transition easily from one language to the next. We often will speak to each other in our own language, but probably more I try to speak in Italian just because I have to work on my prepositions. But just so everybody knows, when we're arguing, we always go to our own language. We need every help we can get. The kids... usually we'll speak in Italian to Barbara and English to me. And amongst themselves, it just kind of depends upon the day. It's probably really 50-50 for us.
All the subjects.
Yeah.
If it's in English, but for me it's mainly English.
Any other questions from the kids?
Do you travel around by boat?
That is a nice question. I like that. In Trieste, they love traveling by boats. Trieste has one of the largest sailboat races in the world, and the problem is there's over 2,000 boats in this race, but of the 2,000, probably only about 100 know how to drive a boat. So it's like bumper boats out there. There's accidents and there's all sorts of drama in this boat race. But they love traveling by boat. We live up above, so we don't travel by boat very often. There are some, like almost like a bus that you would take, but it goes in the water from different places around the city. So we have every once in a while taken one of those boats to kind of move around. But typically we stay on land.
It's popular. One of the sports that we have popular for young people like you is rowing.
Rowing, yes. A lot of rowing in the Mediterranean Sea there. Good question.
How long does it take to get there from Montana?
That is another good question. Usually if you're traveling from Italy to Montana, from when we leave in the airport to when we arrive in Montana is usually probably about 24 hours of traveling, because you have to go someplace, wait in the airport a while, change airplanes. It's probably about, in the actual air, it's probably only about 16 hours in the air. But then there's the rest that you kind of have to wait around. It's a long day. In fact, as parents, we're very happy our kids are older now. It makes it a lot easier. Good question. I like that. Yes.
Do you eat like sushi in Italy, like you do in other places, or do you eat meat?
That is another good question. It's actually a more profound question than you might think. The Italians do like sushi, and my family, except for me, love sushi. But
it's from Japanese.
It's from Japan, but Italians don't have as many, I think, ethnic foods like Japanese or Mexican food or different. They really like their Italian food. So the majority of their restaurants are going to be pizza places or pasta places,
and especially ice cream.
Wherever you go, you can find an ice cream shop. And they're. You like ice cream?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how good this ice cream is. It's so good. It's creamy. Kind of just melts down your hand. It's delicious. It's really good. What's your favorite flavor?
I like vanilla or chocolate.
Yeah, both of those are really good in Italy. So you would enjoy that. Yes. There is one, I think there's one place I felt that had over 50, one place, I think they were bragging about that. I would say a typical ice cream place is probably going to have about 20 or so different flavors, roughly. Yes?
Are the restaurants out there really nice?
I mean, they're serving pizza, so yes. I would say, yeah, I mean, it would be kind of like here, there's some fancy restaurants, but there's also just a lot of, you know what they don't have? They don't have things like Pizza Hut, or they do have a few McDonald's, but usually if it's a restaurant, it's going to be not like a chain, it's just going to be, you know, Luigi's Pizza, or, you know, just some random pizza name, what? So
I think that it's really different is our breakfast. You eat eggs for breakfast, right? Sometimes. And bacon. An Italian would never do that. Our breakfast is milk, maybe some coffee, cookies, and croissant. Pretty good.
That is a typical breakfast.
You get tired of breakfast.
Do I get tired of breakfast?
Yeah.
I never get tired of breakfast. Yeah, lots of Nutella. If anybody's ever tried Nutella, that is very popular in Italy.
It's Italian.
It's Italian, and it's basically, if you want to know a secret, one of the best things you can do is get two pieces of bread, cover one with peanut butter, one with Nutella, make that sandwich. Perfect.
Now, an Italian will never do that. We'll lose the citizenship over this.
Probably true. You know what drink Italians can't stand?
Aww.
Is root beer.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't think anyone in Europe likes root beer.
Root beer, for some reason, just doesn't...
I only have a question. Why? Why drinking root beer?
They have their own version of root beer that I think is disgusting too. So it's
Chinotto. And we don't have Italian soda. It's
Italian
nice
soda Italian. Or pasta.
Alfredo. I don't know any Alfredo. We have a similar version, but it's not really Italian something.
Yeah. We have a special kit here. Yes.
How do you feel about the green tube Parmesan cheese?
You might want to leave now, Greg. She might throw something at you.
I just feel sad for you guys. It's really sad.
Kraft Parmesan is not, she's not, no.
No, it's not allowed.
Yeah, that's definitely not allowed in our house.
Once you try the chunk of Parmesan cheese, then you'll understand why.
It's true. It's true.
But you do have better steaks. We don't have good meat, except in Tuscany, where there is a specific cow that is raised for good steaks. Otherwise, Montana, Italy tend to none.
Yeah.
Any questions from adults or kids?
Since we're on the topic, is there anything that you guys look forward to?
My family, this is going to be revealing way too much about our parenting, but they love crunch berries.
They or you?
I'm not going to answer that question. So crunch berries are very popular, as well as Dr. Pepper, which doesn't exist there. And so those are probably the things we talk about the most as a house. But Pop-Tarts as well. Pop-Tarts. The essentials, you know. The essentials.
All of Ryan's favorite foods. You nailed it.
Yes.
Are there Bible camps for children?
We do have some.
We have, several Bible camps. And this is that's a really good question, too, because it's because the church is so small, this is a great chance. When usually students are the only believer in their whole high school or their own middle school, not only their class, the whole middle school in Italy. So for them to be able to all come together to some place in Italy, and they'll travel 6 hours, 8 hours to go to these camps for a week. But it's their chance to kind of be reminded that God has worked all over in the country, and then they get connected and send each other messages. My daughter went last year, and it really changed her whole perspective. And being able to connect with other young Christians in Italy has been really life changing for her. It's really important for her, and so we're excited that she's actually at Big Sky Bible Camp this week too. So yeah, good question. There are those, and they're really, really important, especially for the believing children. Yes?
Are there any yards?
Yards? That's also a good question. There are, but I would say the vast majority of Italians live in apartments, because in that country there are 760 million people in that country, and so it's not as big as Montana, and so there's a lot more people there than there are here, and so they have to build apartments to kind of so everybody can have a place. But then that means most people don't have yards. There are some houses in the outside, in the outskirts of a city that do have yards, but the majority don't.
Chris, yeah. Do you have a question?
Well, I'll yield to the kid.
Go.
I was curious. You mentioned about the culture, Roman Catholic culture, and when trying to witness to Roman Catholics, or at least build a bridge with them, have you found any distinctives of Protestantism or the Reformation that is a point of tension for them, or maybe the solas or something like that, a pebble in their shoes, so to speak?
That's another good question. We almost always talk about, one of the first things we talk about is the authority of Scripture. So Sola Scriptura is probably our starting point, just to help them also, because sometimes they don't understand what the difference is, but saying, for us, our authority is the Word of God, and for you, you have the Word of God, but it's under the authority of the Pope and the interpretation of the Pope. But that kind of changes everything, that swap there. So that's usually a big starting point for us, just to help people to understand why there's these differences, why it's so important. And then from there we always talk about justification by faith and in grace. Those are two concepts that are missing from the Catholic concept. And so kind of working through those and explaining those it kind of helps them understand, okay, this is what the big difference is. And from that, you know, there's other smaller changes that can that can take place. But there's often they're very receptive to talking about that. And for example, Barbara, when she went through that Bible study, was in the book of Romans with Nicoletta. The book of Romans can be very helpful as well, as it's pretty logical and clear, and it kind of highlights a lot of those differences. Rosanna?
Yes. Are there families in your church that homeschool or choose to educate their kids at home?
Good question. We don't.
Not in our church, but it's possible in Italy to have home, and they actually grew through COVID. So
there's a small homeschool movement, but it has been growing through COVID and just through some of the changes. And
because of the economy, the majority of the moms have to work. It's hard to survive in Italy with just one income, so that will make it hard for a mom to be able to homeschool.
They don't talk about
tennis,
it as much,
yeah.
But they do have tennis and ping pong. Simone plays ping pong for a couple of years. He plays volleyball right now. So I think that'd be a big sport. So they do. I don't know if you've ever played that game called, like, you might call it bocce ball or yard. That's actually Italian, bocce. And that's actually an Italian game. And you wouldn't believe how good the old Italians are at that. They would blow your mind. I've seen old men, hardly looking, throw that thing repeatedly and get it within, you know, probably 3 or 4 inches every single time. They're really amazing at it. So they do kind of like some of those yard games, smaller games too.
Do they have big families?
No, not usually. Sometimes in the South they have bigger families.
But actually it's an issue because we are having less and less children. The average is 1.5. That it doesn't mean that there are half kids in Italy, but a family will have 2 kids and another 1, roughly. So actually they are predicting that by the end of the century there will be 25 million Italian less than now. So the government is trying to implement, but it again, it's hard because a lot of the moms have to work. So having bigger families is hard. It's kind of something that is common in Europe. Germany struggles with that too, and other countries like the Scandinavians. So yeah, no big families, unfortunately. So it's a lot of fun to be here.
Yeah, we have 3 kids, and for you guys, 3 kids, that's not very much. But for Italian, 3 kids, exaggerated. Oh, too many kids. I had a lady at the grocery store said, you should have had less children, because I had so many groceries, she was getting tired. She's like, she wasn't happy that I was doing grocery shopping.
How many schools are there?
Italians love schools.
Not my students.
Not our students, but the other ones. There's probably like here, there's lots of elementary schools. One of the differences, they don't have one high school where everybody goes to. You already kind of choose if you want to study science, you go to a science high school. If you want to do art, if you want to do foreign languages. So already in high school, you choose different ones. And so that makes it maybe a little bit different.
What is one way that God, or that you, maybe a situation that you can look back and say, yeah, God really worked through that? What is one situation?
Whew, that is a good question. There's so many ways that I found that besides the mistakes that I made, a lot for me, I can see, and when I was, this might be hard for you to believe, but when I was 25, I was pretty sure I knew everything. And so I think there was a lot of overconfidence that I had, especially in the early years of marriage and missions. And so I think recognizing all of the mistakes that I made, but yet God was still faithful to kind of intervene and work things out despite myself, I would say that I felt like our ministry was really characterized by His mercy and His intervention and His grace. And there's a lot of like pastoral issues that where that took place, and preaching, especially in the beginning, all the mistakes that I made. There's some really embarrassing words in Italian, and this maybe isn't appropriate, but there's a word for discouragement, which is important as a preacher, which is scoraggiare. But there is one letter difference. If you say this is gonna, I'll say the two. See if you can hear the difference. Scoraggiare. One of them means to pass gas. So when you're trying to, it was so discouraging, and you're really trying. You know it exists, but you really are trying to focus. So there's lots of silly mistakes like that, but that can be very disruptive. Like a steering wheel, exactly. So I've always found that the nice thing about missions is I think it really highlighted my weaknesses and my limits, and that really highlights God's mercy and His hand of protection. So I like that question because it really gets to, I think, to the point of how broken we are as people and how great God is. So thank you for that.
All right. Oh, go ahead. Oh,
I have a question. I think I've got the impression that there's a lot of, among more religious people, that there's a lot of like superstition and cultural practices. When you have people becoming believers, do people in the church still struggle with wanting to go back to some of those practices, like some of those traditions that they've grown up with? And they have, if so, how do you and the elders and the people deal with those?
Ooh, another good question. What do you think? Do you think there's superstition like?
Yes, we actually have. There is a statistic that in Italy there are more witches, magicians, like the one that read the cards or things like that, than priests. So there is a good mix. Every like agriculture society will have a mix between the religion and all these practices. And it is hard, but we have learned.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you want to add something?
No.
Yeah. So I think sanctification takes time. But the more you expose a person to the Word of God, the easier it is to let things go. It's not immediate, but the only part that is really hard is that it's countercultural.
Countercultural, yeah.
It's just that you can really go back because you are lonely, especially when you are a teenager, university. It's really, really hard to find someone. Even the best Catholic won't live a holy life as a Christian. And so sometimes it is a real struggle to let go just because you are against everyone, family, friends, and so. But that's why the church likes it. We have small churches, and so it does become like a second family because of that, too.
Myra?
Yeah, I have two questions. When you talk about starting the new church in Udine, and also the second one in Udine, and then that left the original church with 20 people. Like, what factors are you considering? Like, how do you know when to split to the new church?
That's probably one of the more important questions that I think we've had. One of the biggest struggles that we have. I don't think we would have started the church in Udine if there wasn't this kind of this need that was kind of that just kind of came up. That we kind of started to get involved in, and we saw it growing. So we were very well aware of the difficulty after the first one, that feeling of loss there. And so to lose another family, not only another family, but an elder and a family, was a kind of a difficult decision for us. And so again, those were things that we were really praying about. And we've had lots of conversations since then. About okay, what have we learned? What have we learned from this? You know, how can we? What is a good number for us to have where it would be good for us to plant something new. Because we really are committed as this network of churches. This is Serenissima, their symbol on the right there, on the, your right, yep, there. We're trying to realize, okay, at what point is it going to be healthy for us to be able to do something like that? It always hurts when you lose people in your church, even though you know it's for a good reason, like there's something new. And we can look at all the churches of Serenissima. I think there's almost 400 believers now total in this. And 20 years ago, that didn't exist at all. So we can see collectively the blessing of that, but trying to work out the dynamics of when is it wise for a church of, you know, 40 to send a group away? Is that going to be a good decision? How do we make that decision wisely? So, yes, that's something that we're talking about as our church network.
Hey,
Paul. Yes.
What are your thoughts on short-term missions? Either being the host of mission teams or sending them out?
Yeah, we've actually done quite a bit of that, especially in Trieste. So in the past, we've done things from doing some street evangelism to passing out, you know, gospel tracts to people. We've had teaching English has also been something that we've done as well that can be very attractive to the Italians because they want to travel in Europe as well. And so those are things that we've done. We actually set a group from Grace Church, maybe it was 6, 7 years ago-ish, and the church in Trieste was doing a summer camp. And so the group that we came helped with this. It was almost like a vacation Bible school summer camp in English, but specifically also teaching some of the gospel stories. And so those are some things that we've done in the past. So it's good. I think it's a good way to keep also people connected and having people see the ministry. And I know when we went, Titus was there. And Titus, I know, is actually interested in being a missionary in Italy right now. So those are all exciting ways also to kind of expand people's mind to gospel work in the kingdom. Yes?
How many people? Are there a lot of people that love God there?
Oh, there are people who love God there, but there's not a lot of people that love God there yet, but we see that number growing more and more, and that's really, you probably said the most important thing you could. All we want at the end of the day is that there's a bunch of people that are loving God, and so if you could pray for us about that, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, Ellen.
This question is more for Barbara.
Perfect.
Barbara, as a wife and a pastor's wife and a mother and a teacher, share with us ways that you are ministering outside of your church.
I try. Well, my work at school takes a lot of my time besides the family. So during the school year, I just try to encourage some women ministry, but I'm not directly doing. I do less just because I have to give up for the school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then during the summer, I come along Mass, and we just spend time with the people at church, and then, but just it's just a mindset. I don't know, maybe it's less specific of a role than here, the fact of being a pastor wife. We kind of at the church do all the same things. Like, we try to reach the people that we interact the most. So for me, it would be my colleagues at work. And then we do have some women ministry. We do a retreat every year. And then when I have time, I help with translation from English resources, Christian resources, from English into Italian.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
For the libro.
No. And what else? And children, that's why it was a big blessing for me to be here at Grace, because I got not to work. Thank you. And so I was more involved in the ministry, like direct ministry. But the work is still, I see the need of the gospel in the eye of my students every day, especially through COVID. It was really hard because I could see how the families of my students couldn't give them any hope. I could pray with my children, telling them that everything was under God's control and plan, but they couldn't. So I can see how my presence at school, even if I can't directly teach into the classroom, brings me opportunity to share the gospel.
That's kind of what I was thinking, not necessarily a structured type ministry, but just...
Yeah. And all the other women, especially at Udine, they are great. The majority of women got saved after, and they have unbelieving husbands. But through, like the verse in Peter says, through the faithful following the Lord, they're coming to the Lord. The guy that is going to be baptized, Sergio, came through the faithful prayer and minister of his wife. So it's really encouraging and to see. So it's a good women community, and they will love to meet you all, and they really, they love to go on vacation, just them, leave the husband home, and they organize short vacations, just 3 days, just the women at church. And
Serious vacations,
they went to Crete, I couldn't go because I was working, they went to Crete, they went on the Alps, and
they went to Albania,
so it's kind of, and that really builds a good community, and so they get a, so they can do ministry together even through this, so.
I think we are out of time. Craig, would you pray for Schwanevelt's and Vanelli's for us?
Father, thank you for just this ministry and the way that we can see beyond our myopia or our own lives and get a glimpse into what you're doing in other parts of the world. Lord, thank you for the faithfulness of the Schwanevelt's and the Vanelli's and just the ministry there in Italy. I pray you would remind us and burden us to pray for them and the ministry there. And Lord, be faithful in praying for pastors and leadership here as well. Just thanks, Lord, for time with them and just looking and seeing the things you've done in the last many years there anyway.